There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. And we are live at your CBD store, West Mobile. Talk to Joe Brown in just a second. I do want to talk about this hour as we have another press conference coming up with the Escambia County Sheriff's Office. Later on this hour, we'll be giving you more information as it becomes available from NAS Pensacola. You heard the coverage this morning. And Katerina Lukatich from News 5 will join us here in about 8 minutes to give us an update as there's a new piece of information and at least some identification for the shooter in that mass shooting today in Pensacola at NAS Pensacola. So we will get that coming in just a couple minutes. Also, Congressman Mo Brooks is going to join us in the second half of this hour. He's been on, well, he's always on Twitter, but he's been expressly verbose on Twitter about the SNAP benefits. We'll get into that story. And coming up in hour number two, it's back and forth right now between the Sessions campaign and the Byrne campaign, of course, both in the running for the Republican Senate nomination here in Alabama. And John Sharp has written like a tome about this over at AL.com. He's going to join us to talk about that at 1 o'clock. But yeah, let's talk about what we're doing today and hanging out again with my buddy Joe Brown. Thanks for having us back.
Sean, it's always great having you here.
Yeah, it's okay. This is fun because we last time, and I still want to learn more about CBD because I think for a lot of people, they've heard it. They kind of think they may know it, but they know they don't. But at the same time, this is Christmas season, and you've got stuff in there. I just walked in the shop, and you, I mean, y'all are set up for Christmas.
Yeah, we have it all decorated to get in the spirit, but we have some great stocking stuffers. If you want to introduce somebody to CBD, it's a great way to do so. I mean, there's lotions and bath bombs and gummies, just a low-price stuff to you know, get into CBD. But, you know, here at your CBD store, West Mobile, we don't... We don't really sell CBD. We provide hope. I mean, that's our motto.
Well, you've told your story, which is compelling before, because, you know, you too were a little bit skeptical of this.
I was skeptical but intrigued, and I'm glad my intrigueness, is that a word?
Yeah, it is now.
Okay. I'm glad my intrigueness, you know, led me to CBD. Yep. When I tried it, 2 hours after I tried it, I Googled how to open a store, and that was 6 months ago, and it's led me down a path. I mean, I'm very proud, very excited, very happy what I'm able to do here with my store and with my customers.
You know, you're providing product, you're educating folks as well, because this is uncharted territory for most folks, Joe. They're like, okay, I hear about it, I've got this ink, I got this pain, I got this thing. You can help them negotiate that.
Well, we like to educate people as to, you know, what CBD is, how it works in your body, along with the CBD your body makes. But, you know, while we educate our customers, we also educate ourselves. We stay in the forefront. We have a PhD in analytical chemistry on our board, and we stay at the top of the list on finding things out.
Well, let's talk about this. People come in today to your CBD store of West Mobile. You got your open house special. Tell me about this.
Well, we have a raffle. There's no purchase necessary. You get an extra raffle ticket with every $100 spent in the raffle. We're giving away a $250 gift bundle. And we're also giving away a pair of tickets to Mobile Theater Guild's upcoming production, So Long Slice, by Thomas Perez. I just happen to be one of the characters in the play.
Right. Who are you playing?
I play Shank. He's a retired neurologist, and it's the third installment of the Griffith Shell Society Shell series. And we hope to see everybody there, and that's one of the reasons I'm giving away a set of tickets, because I've always supported the arts, and we can talk about that later as far as the different things that I have coming up this month to support not only the arts, but the other community organizations that, give back. And I like to give back to our community.
Well, you do. I've known you for a long time. Yeah, we'll talk about the 12 Days of Christmas and the give back there. But people come in today. They can register for the raffle. They can try to win these tickets to the event. And at the same time, you've got a deal here, open house special, where you buy one and get one.
20% off.
Cha-ching. I like this.
BOGO 20.
BOGO. See, that's what the hipsters call it, BOGO 20?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to come tell folks, you know, I was telling folks today, I can give you all the address here on Hillcrest, but I always said, if you're coming south on Hillcrest before you get to Greeley Lot, we're on the right.
Yeah.
But how do you tell them?
We're right across from the Waffle House, Sean.
Now here. We're talking.
Patty melt, onions on wheat. That's the deal.
Okay. At 2 o'clock, we'll go get a sandwich.
All right.
All deal. Right. Y'all come out and check it out. We are right across from the Waffle House, as Joe said, at your CBD store, West Mobile. Make sure to stop on by and check out what's going on inside. Get registered for that raffle. Make sure you get some advice here. I mean, if there's, you know, for yourself for CBD, but if you got a gift, somebody in your family, I think they might.
Don't forget about your fur babies. We have CBD for your dogs.
But they need
pets, cats, horses.
Yeah, they need it. They need, mine need it. Yes, mine need it for sure. All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. We are live at your CBD store, West Mobile, here on Hillcrest, just north of Greelot on the west side of the road. You'll see the FM Talk 106.5 mobile studio. Stomp on by your CBD store, West Mobile, for the deals we were just talking about with Joe. Plus, I'll hook you up with some of the new run of FM Talk 106.5. Huggers, all kind of goodies for you. So stop by and say hello. All right, my friend Katarina Lukatic from News 5 joining us now with an update on the mass shooting from NAS, Pensacola, that we've been talking about all morning. Hey, Kat.
Hey, Sean.
So there's new information about, is it about the shooter? What have we learned?
Yeah, so the Associated Press has heard from a U.S. official that the shooter is an aviation student from Saudi Arabia. That's the information they have about the shooter, and now the investigation has turned to see if this was a terrorism-related incident. So that's the new information that we have on the shooter. We are expecting a press conference at 12:30 with officials in Escambia County there. We know Governor Ron DeSantis is going to be there, as well as law enforcement officials. So we're waiting to see if we'll get more new information on this new development, possibly the shooter's identity. But we do know that he is a Saudi Arabian aviation student, and now the investigation has taken a turn to see if this was terrorism-related.
I mean, Katarina, you know what everybody just thought when you said that, right? I mean, people are thinking back to 9/11 and the training and the Saudi nationals that were training in aviation that then flew those planes into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and into Shanksville. As we talk about this, maybe we'll go backwards a little bit for folks because this information was changing throughout the morning. Let's kind of go through what timeline and where are we now with the number of deceased, I guess, including this Saudi national shooter and the number of people that are injured.
Okay, so if we go from the beginning, just before 7 o'clock is when shots began ringing out at NAS Pensacola, and it happened inside of one of those aviation classrooms. And it didn't take very long for law enforcement to get in there. Two deputies confronted the shooter. There was a shootout between the deputies and that shooter. The two deputies were hit. They were injured. They will both be okay, but they shot and killed the shooter. So when we're taking a look at numbers, there are a total of 11 people who have been injured as a result of this. Four people have died, and that number includes the shooter, who is dead. And then there are seven people who are still in the hospital, and two of those are the two deputies who were shot by the shooter as they were confronting him, trying to get him to stop shooting people.
Now, this is once again to point out our first responders and these people that run towards gunfire instead of away. And here we have two of these deputies that are shot. You said but both deputies should be fine.
Yeah, and that is just the pure example of heroism right there. One of them was shot in the arm. He's been treated and is expected to be released soon. The other one was shot in the knee. He's undergoing surgery right now, but again, is expected to be okay.
Now, the other victims, I know that they wanted to notify next of kin. Have they said anything, whether the injured or the other people that were deceased, are they members of the military? Are they civilians? Because there's a whole bunch of civilians that work at NAS Pensacola.
Yeah, that's right. There are both civilians and there are military members, but we're really not sure of that. All the information that we had coming out was from that first initial press conference around 9:30. And I'm taking a look at our live shot now, and it looks like officials are starting to gather for that new 12:30 briefing.
All right. And probably one of the key pieces of information is what y'all have already brought to us here, that no name here, but they are confirming, you said AP, is that this is a Saudi national that was the shooter.
Right, yes. And so now the FBI, the NCIS, is on board, and now they're investigating. Since a Saudi national was involved, if this was terrorism related.
You know, at the presser earlier, I saw, the Sheriff Morgan there in Escambia County. He was talking, but he also had representatives from the Navy there, and he mentioned other federal authorities. I don't know, have you been given any idea who kind of runs this investigation when it's on a naval base? Is it still Escambia County, or does it become FBI, or who does this?
So normally it would be NCIS since it was on a naval base. But I think now that there is a possible terrorism aspect into it, the FBI may take over the investigation.
Wow. And this is, this is something that people already, the second this news came out this morning, were texting me and sending me messages, is this some kind of copycat of what happened in Pearl Harbor, speaking of which, tomorrow Pearl Harbor Day.
Well, and that's the thing is that, this is the second time this week that we're on a naval base that you have a mass shooting. And the one at Pearl Harbor was a U.S. sailor, and we still don't know any possible motive behind that one. And then just a few days later, you have this situation here locally.
And yeah, this one right here, I mean, it's tragic anytime, but when it's right here in our backyard. So 12:30, another press conference that will be led, will be led by Sheriff Morgan or NCIS, who will lead that presser?
I'm not sure who's going to lead it. We got a message from the governor's office that he will be holding the press conference. So I think it'll be Governor Ron DeSantis and then the law enforcement agencies as well. But I'm not sure exactly what law enforcement agencies will be hearing from.
All right. Well, we appreciate the new information on this very sad story, Katerina, and we'll check back with you very soon.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. Katerina Lukatich checking in from News 5, and there you go. I mean, y'all have the same reaction I did? We can take a call or two here. We're going to have Congressman Mo Brooks is going to join us about 12:35, but and our phone number, 343-0106, 343-0106. Your reaction, Saudi National. Training for aviation. We've seen this before. In this case, obviously played out differently, but this is a situation where you heard in the earlier press conference, and we can get a little clip of that coming up in a second, that NAS Pensacola, I think somebody asked a question. Well, you said the shooting was in a classroom. Which class, where? And one of the officials with the Navy said, well, we've got classrooms everywhere. This is a training, this is a school at NAS Pensacola. So how many people come through our facilities to get training? And you would say it would be a legitimate application from somebody from a allied country, which Saudi Arabia is one of our allies, to have their people come train. But look what this story, and think back to, the flight training, it wasn't through the military, but there was civilian flight training for the dirtbags that flew the planes on 9/11. All right, Dalton, do we have time to get, I'm looking at my clock, we have a few minutes here, can we get a little bit of that pressure from earlier? All right, let's go ahead and roll that.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Escambia County Sheriff David Morgan. At approximately 6:51 this morning, the call went out to the Escambia County Sheriff's Office Central Dispatch that there was an active shooter on Naval Air Station Pensacola. We had two units immediately respond, many to come behind, of course. While we would love to do a full disclosure with you this morning about everything that we are aware of, quite obviously we cannot do that. There are things that we are now in the investigative process that are required to be held back by not just the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, but our lead federal agencies, which of course are the FBI and the ATF and the associated federal partners that we have, and the U.S. Attorney's Office is also present. As the mayor said, I want to assure our community that the threat has been negated. Our community is secure at this time. We have no reason to believe or are we looking for any additional shooters within Escambia County, not just within the parameters of NAS Pensacola. I would tell you, this strikes home particularly hard for me as a retired military member. Walking through the crime scene was like being on the set of a movie. And as the mayor eloquently put, you just don't expect this to happen at home. This doesn't happen in Escambia County. It doesn't happen in Pensacola. It doesn't happen to our friends and neighbors who are members of the United States Navy. But it did. It has. And so for now, we're here to pick up the pieces. We have two officers at the Escambia County Sheriff's Office in the initial response that negated the threat that are now in a local hospital. We expect them to fully recover. It was a member of the Escambia County Sheriff's Office that did negate the threat. I will share that with you. It was one of our officers that did that. As the captain said, we have as of right now, we do have four deceased and approximately eight total. That includes the ones that have deceased, by the way, that are injured. The crime scene processing continues under the auspices of the FBI and the ATF. We are lending all local assistance that we have to this effort. Everything from command buses to, you know, crime scene techs if they are so needed. We ask for the prayers of the community, and we ask for the assistance of the press. Please be patient. These things are ever-evolving. You may hear a misstatement from one of us at this juncture. Why? Because we've got a lot of moving parts in this machine, and we're all trying to get it in sync. And so if something comes back later that we have to correct, I would ask that you not be overly critical. The reason why I say that is this, is we have grieving families at this moment that the Navy now, with their grief counselors and with ours at the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, are going out to handle the human side of a police action. We need your assistance with that. We need your partnership at this point. And we have enough critics in our community, and we ask that you assist us. So if we reach out to you as a member of the press and ask for that assistance, I ask that you come forward with it. At that time, at this juncture, I will stop, and I believe Captain Kinsella wants to open it for questions. All right, we'll answer any questions that we can.
Before it opens for questions, I just want to say publicly how grateful we are of the assistance from the Sheriff's Department. As the Sheriff said, it was a couple of his deputies that neutralized the active shooter. It could have been a lot worse if we didn't have the response that we did from our local partners. So, sir, thank you. Thank you. And Mayor, thank you for your support, and thank you to the county for your support also. This is a community effort. And so, any questions?
Yeah, was the shooter a military person? Can you say that?
I don't want to talk about the identity of the shooter at this time. I'm sorry.
Can we talk about where on base it happened?
Yes, it happened in one of our classroom buildings.
Which classroom?
It was in. Well, I don't want to say it this time because okay. There's a lot of worried folks out there that don't know if it was in where their people worked or not, and I don't want to unnecessarily worry folks at this time. So that'll come out in time.
How's the process of notifying the families right now?
Again, we're working through it. We're working through it. I appreciate the question, but we're working through it as best we can to make sure that the right people know at the right time, and we don't do it through the media. But thank you.
Do we know where the officers were shot?
We sure do. Yep, we do. They were... if you want to take that one.
Chief. Yeah, the two deputies that initially engaged the suspect, one was shot in the arm and one was shot in the knee. The one that shot in the arm is being treated at a local hospital, and the one that was shot in the knee is currently in surgery. Both expected to survive.
What was the response time from when the shots first rang out to, you know, when the deputies engaged?
So I think should be a lesson.
Okay, go ahead, Jim.
Well, I can tell you we have a precinct nearby. We got the call, as Sheriff Morgan mentioned, about 9 minutes before 7 o'clock, and we had officers here within just a couple of minutes. They quickly went to the location, as the captain said, the building in which the active shooter was, and it covered a couple different floors. This is a rather large building. The deputies and those assisting agencies from the Pensacola Police Department, FHP, FDLE, and all that you see around here all worked in conjunction to neutralize the threat, and that's why there was not more loss of life.
What is your name, sir?
Chip Simmons, C-H-I-P-S-I-M-M-O-N-S. I'm the chief deputy from the sheriff's office.
How long was the engagement the total time?
Again, I don't have the exact numbers, but I can tell you that it did cover two floors from that one building. As Sheriff mentioned, when you get into the scene like that, it is a bit like a movie because you have spent shell casings all over, but the first thing you want to do is to make sure that the threat is no longer a threat. You neutralize that threat, and then second.
That was a little bit from the earlier press conference. There's one to come, but the piece of information that is breaking right now that we heard from Katarina Luketich from News 5 is the shooter, the killer, the dirtbag, a Saudi aviation student. So I guess Saudi national aviation student at NAS Pensacola. Feel like we've been here before? Representative Mo Brooks joins us next right here on Midday Mobile, live from your CBD store, West Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Friday. Show's on the road. We are live at your CBD store, West Mobile. We'll talk to Joe Brown, owner here, coming up at the beginning of next hour. And I had talked to Congressman Mo Brooks from AL5 to join us. I do want to talk to him about his praise. Even when I was out of town, I was getting the news updates on his praise of the White House and the president's move to get rid of SNAP benefits for able-bodied adults. But also, we are talking about this new piece of information that just came out that the shooter, the dirtbag here in this mass shooting at NAS Pensacola, a Saudi national aviation student. And I want to bring on Representative Mo Brooks to talk more about that as well. Congressman?
Hi, how you doing, Sean?
Good, and good to talk to you. And I know we'll talk some more about this, the SNAP benefits, but have you been following what's happened down here just across the Baldwin County line into Florida and this shooting at NAS Pensacola?
I have. As always, you're saddened to hear about this kind of criminal conduct where people decide to kill other people. I don't know the motivation yet. I don't know why the shooter, the killer, did what he did. Hopefully, we will have enough information and insight that will at least provide an explanation, although it's inexplicable that someone would do this to other human beings.
Yeah, and it's one of these situations where with Pearl Harbor Day tomorrow, you know, not that it makes a difference what day on the calendar it falls, but it, you had the shooting at the Pearl Harbor Naval Stockyard the other day, yesterday, and then had this one at NAS Pensacola today. It just has people, wondering if there's any connections out there, which there may not be. Who knows what's in the mind of somebody who does this? Right, Congressman, I want to run through a couple things here, and the big one is, though, that has a lot of people talking is, and they can go follow you on Twitter, you can tell them how, but your support for this move with the U.S. Department of Agriculture doing away with state waivers to give SNAP benefits to people that are over 18 that are able-bodied. How does that work? All right, we've lost Congressman. We'll get the Congressman back on. Okay, hello? Congressman, you there?
Yeah, I am. Just had a quick question about the information over the shooting. Wonder if they have any details about the weapon that the man used?
So they asked that in the press conference, and they did not comment. They said at this point they felt it was premature. I think that might have been from Sheriff Morgan or maybe the representative from the Navy. So they did not say. They were asked by, I think, at least twice in that press conference, but they did not say. All right, Congressman Brooks.
Yes, I'm back on, but you're having some problems on your end.
Okay. Well, hopefully we'll hold you through here and you can stay on. I just wanted, I just set up that you had, and people can go look at your Twitter feed and go see the articles that have been written, many here in the state of Alabama, about your support for this move here. U.S. Department of Agriculture saying they're going to do away with state waivers that allow for grown folks, right, to able-bodied adults without dependents who are getting SNAP benefits. It's going to allow that to be removed. Explain to me your support for this.
Sure. It is immoral for able-bodied people who have no dependents, who are adults with a strong economy, to use their voting power to take money from those of us who work for a living to give to themselves in the form of food stamps or SNAP benefits or what have you. And I applaud President Trump's decision to encourage able-bodied adult Americans to quit being slackers and to earn the money that they need to feed themselves.
You put a number on this, Congressman. How much per year are you saying that this would involve?
This particular program, the estimates are somewhere in the neighborhood of only, in quotation marks, $1 billion. By this particular program, I'm talking about what the president's decision would do to the roughly $70 billion in total food stamps, SNAP benefits. So it's 1/7 of the total cost. That's the kind of impact we're talking about. But there's a principle involved here. People should be self-sufficient when they can. They should not live off the hard work of others. And that's a very easy principle for everybody to understand. The logic being, if all of us did that, then it would collapse because nobody would be working.
Right. And that's one of the things that I think surprised people when they saw this, who have not been studying it, is they said, wait a second, how can an adult, an able-bodied adult with no dependents, be getting SNAP benefits? How does that happen? I mean, a lot of us were surprised by that.
It is a part of the Democratic Party's effort to create a dependency on the federal government in hopes that that will garner them more votes in general elections. That's what it really comes down to. There's a segment of the population that is lazy, that would much rather vote for a living than work for one. And that's who the Democrats are appealing to when they oppose rational allocations of food stamp benefits to those people who actually need them and can't otherwise feed themselves or their families.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because the attacks will come out and say you're moving to get rid of food stamps or SNAP benefits for people that need them, and it's actually very specific here. You just said it's not for people with dependents, it's not for people who it means somebody who could go get a job, right? To put it in Sullivanese here.
Absolutely. I mean, we just had economic numbers that came out today that show the lowest unemployment rate in half a century. 260-something thousand more Americans are holding jobs. Wages went up over 3% over the past 12 months. You should be able to get a job that allows you to support yourself if you will just use any effort at all to get one.
Now, listen to the numbers here, folks. Congressman Brooks, when you talk about the number amount saved, talk about the number of people that fit that definition, the people that are taking advantage of the system, that don't have to have that don't have dependents, that can work.
Well, keep in mind these are estimates, but the estimates are in the ballpark of 500,000 to 700,000 people. Of course, that's an estimate, so it can be high, it can be low. But no one who can work in an economy that needs workers to fill unfilled jobs should be allowed to dun the rest of us, to live off the hard work of the rest of us when they can support themselves. I'm supporting myself by working. You're supporting yourself by working. I would infer that most, if not all, of your listeners are supporting themselves by working. We should not have to work hard enough to not only pay for our own needs, but pay for those who are too lazy to work like the rest of us.
And, you know, like you said, you're not sending them off, whether right or wrong, but you're not sending them off into a place that there are no jobs. You're sending them off into an economy, like you just said, that is people begging for employees.
This is as robust economy as we have enjoyed in the United States in half a century. So there is no logical reason why somebody cannot get a job if they're sincere about trying to get one, provided they are able-bodied, they are adults, and they have no dependents. Maybe them
so,
getting a little bit hungry because they're laziness will encourage them to work like the rest of us.
Well, and I'm glad we can, you know, have these conversations too, because somebody will just hear, you know, a little clip, or somebody will say, oh yeah, you know, that Congressman Brooks, he wants to take away the food stamp benefits from people, you know, who have no other way to feed themselves, and that is not accurate.
There are some people who are disabled, physically cannot support themselves. Those are the type of people that I think we have a societal burden to try to help out of compassion. But people who can support themselves have no business living off the hard work of others. It's a very simple concept. It's one that's been around for thousands of years, but which has been abrogated by the Democrats to some degree because they've figured out this is a way to get votes. So they offer all this free stuff that those of us who work for a living end up having to pay for, which in turn makes it more difficult for us to support our own families because we have less money with which to do it.
Now, speaking of votes, Congressman Brooks, while I have you on the phone, so Speaker Pelosi moving the train out, right? Here we go. And so what do we need to know back here in Alabama on this impeachment? What's next here after the presser yesterday from Speaker Pelosi?
Nancy Pelosi taking a visible role like she did yesterday suggests to me that the Democrats have done a whip count and they have determined that they have the majority of votes needed to impeach Donald Trump, and hence they're going to go forward. If they did not have the majority votes needed, then the odds are Nancy Pelosi would not have been leading with her chin. I'll tell you my reaction to all this is the public's pretty much made up their mind. It's about like the Iron Bowl. There's no way you're going to persuade an Auburn grad who's an Auburn fan on Iron Bowl Day to pull for Alabama or vice versa. And that's where we are as a society. If you're a left winger, you are convinced that Donald Trump is guilty of sin and should be impeached. If you're a conservative like I am, if you analyze the law like I do, then you're similarly persuaded, but in the exact opposite direction. In my judgment, there has been no impeachable offense committed, particularly in an historical context, but more specifically looking at the requirements of the United States Constitution. And as such, I will be voting against articles of impeachment when they come to the House floor. And some of these articles, we don't have them yet, but what's being reported, they're totally fictional, wholly unrelated to what the constitutional standard is. The constitutional standard is high crimes, misdemeanors, treason, and bribery. The Democrats are talking about things like abuse of power. Well, abuse of power is in the eyes of the beholder. When the president is enforcing our border security to the Democrats, that's abuse of power. To me, he's doing exactly what he should with the executive branch authority given to him under the Constitution. Besides that, abuse of power is not a crime in America. So, you know, that's just a phrase that the Democrats use to try to justify what they're doing, but that is quite clearly not a high crime, misdemeanor, treason, or bribery as required by the United States Constitution.
Well, if this does not meet the constitutional muster, like you say, you know, even though Speaker Pelosi said, well, she's not doing this because of any animus towards President Trump. She's doing it because, you know, because of defending the Constitution, or most accurately, like you pointed out, it's because the whip count came up and said they had the votes. So with that being said, is this going forward? Let's say this looks like it'll happen. There's enough Democrat votes that moves to the Senate. Does this now become the new thing to do? So down the road, will this be the thing? So let's turn things around and you have a Democrat in the White House, and you as a Republican House member, will you move to say, well, it's abuse of power? Just, you know, we need to impeach this this Democrat.
Well, that is the risk. You're opening up a Pandora's box. By way of example, with Barack Obama, I on many occasions had my constituents ask me why I did not try to impeach Barack Obama. And there were plenty of executive orders that Barack Obama entered that were later found by the courts to be illegal. Okay? But that doesn't mean that it was a crime what the President Obama administration did. That just means that they were aggressive. They tried to open up the borders as much as they could. They tried to give work permits to certain kinds or classes of illegal aliens. And while I was convinced that was against the law, the president's team, I think, in good faith, thought otherwise, and while they've lost a lot of that in court, To me, that's not an impeachable offense. But if you start right. having political disagreements, policy disagreements being the root cause of impeachment, then we've got a real problem in our country. And I hope we never visit this kind of situation again where it's abused like it's been abused by the House and Nancy Pelosi.
Well, I mean, just looking at it through a pragmatic lens, not even idealism, right? I mean, there's a whole bunch of time now in this session that has been spent on discussion of this impeachment proceeding where, you know, we could be doing other things with that time in the House of Representatives.
That is correct. It's sucking up the oxygen in the room. Probably 70 to 80% of the mental power of the House and Senate leadership in Washington, D.C., is devoted to issues about impeachment. Certainly that's what the news media ask about on a regular basis. It's what constituents ask about on a regular basis. And so our attention is diverted to impeachment issues when we should be talking about saving 2,000 American lives a year by having better border security. We should be talking about our deficit and debt that risk a debilitating insolvency and bankruptcy, with our deficit last year being $984 billion. We should be fighting over socialism versus free enterprise. But instead, the mental energy is on impeachment.
Hey, just one, and I know you need to run, but I have to ask you one question. On this socialism thing, I'll have people push back and say, listen, and they name you specifically, too. They'll say, you talk to a lot of people from the Republican Party, and they've named you, that talk about Democrats being socialist, and we feel that that is not accurate, you know, and get into a discussion of government owning the means of production and that. So when you say the Democrats push for socialism, Congressman, what do you mean? How do you lay that out?
Well, I have an economics background, graduated with distinction in economics from Duke University, which is the highest honors you can have in a particular major. And the Democrats are quite clearly socialists. They are the Socialist Party of America. You know, we had a Democratic Party that was of one kind in the 1960s, and there was a revolution. Keep in mind that it was the Republican Party that passed the Voting Rights Act, that passed the Civil Rights Act, okay? Not the Democrats, the Republicans. The Democrats were the ones that opposed it. And then you had another revolution about a half century later between free enterprise and socialism. And the socialist wing of the Democratic Party has conquered the free enterprise wing. And you see it with Obamacare. That's a step towards socialized medicine. You see it in a lot of different ways where the Democrats are trying to use the power of the government to determine who is successful and who is not. The more power you give to the central government, the more socialist that society is, the less freedom and liberty that we have. And freedom and liberty is the basic value of free enterprise.
As always, I enjoy our discussions, Congressman, and I know you got to go, but I will get you back on soon if you have some time here over the next month or so.
Sure, as you wish, Sean. Keep them straight down in the Mobile Bay Area, and let's all pray for those yes. people who are involved in that shootout in Pensacola. That's just terrific.
It is. Congressman Mo Brooks, thank you for your time. We're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile. We are live at your CBD store, West Mobile. Make sure you stop on by, too. We've got some FM Talk 106.5 goodies, but that is really the bottom of this, because we've got all kind of special deals going on at your CBD store, West Mobile. Just walk in and ask Joe Brown about it. We're right here just north of Greelot on Hillcrest on the west side of the road. You'll see the van. Come say hi. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, we are just getting started with that presser over in Pensacola. Let's go live, Dalton, if we can, to the press conference from NAS Pensacola.
Responding to the scene, and you'll hear more in depth of some of these stories as the days go on, but I can tell you lives were saved because of the response of people, both in uniform with the Navy, in uniform with Escambia County, and so in one of the darkest days, I think, of the base's history, you still saw some of that bravery and grit come out, and even people who had been wounded themselves thinking about others and what could be done to save others. And so those stories are inspiring and keeps us going on a very otherwise very bad day. And with that, I'm going to bring up the base commander of NAS Pensacola.
Thank you, sir. Yep. Thank you, sir. Hello, everybody. Again, Captain Tim Kinsler, the commanding officer of Naval Air Station Pensacola. This has been a very, very difficult day for us, for our families, for the Navy family here. All I can tell you is that I am absolutely in awe of the response by our sailors, by our civilian DOD, and by the Escambia County Sheriff's Department. There was some real heroism today. I mean, real heroism. It made me, I'm devastated. We are in shock. This is surreal. But I couldn't be prouder to wear the uniform that I wear because of my brothers and sisters in uniform, civilian or otherwise, that did what they did today to save lives. And for our brothers and sisters here with the state of Florida and with Escambia County Emergency Management and the Sheriff's Department, from my bottom of my heart, I thank you. And thank you for the support, and thank you for support, Governor. The days ahead are going to be difficult when it finally sinks in what has happened here. The most important thing going forward for us is to support the families. They are family. They're our family. We are a family here in the Department of the Navy. So that's where most of our efforts will be going through, to supporting those families and the people that have been affected by this terrible tragedy. With that,
Chair.
Thank you, everyone. We thank you for all the prayers for the Escambia County officers and, of course, for the injured Navy personnel. As the governor has said and Captain Kinsella, while a dark day, you know, folks, this shows who we are. This shows the best of who we are. In that one of us needs help, everybody responds. I will tell you this morning, I've been more than impressed by the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the U.S. Attorney's Office and all of those folks that when the call went out, you didn't need to look behind you, who was following you through that door, because you knew they were all standing behind you and they were there together. And so we're in a recovery mode right now. This is going to be a lengthy investigation. Do not expect quick answers. There's going to be some parts of this investigation, not only that we're a part of with the FBI and the ATF and the state authorities, that you may never have access to, just because of the fact of again, the nature of the case and who we're dealing with. That will be extremely frustrating for you. This is something I'd talk about in your government and your elected officials today that no one speaks of, and that's called trust. You're going to have to trust us. We're going to tell you what you need to know to keep our communities and our state and our nation safe. And I want to also assure you that from the men and women of the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, who are more than proud to serve every day, that you will hear the truth from us as best we can tell you. Pray for the Navy personnel. There are grieving mothers and fathers today who will never recover from this day. And if you don't believe me, let me give you a David Morgan test. In 2 weeks' time, remember the names of who was wounded and killed here today. And you won't. You won't. But if today it was a member of your family that was wounded or killed today, this day will be etched in your memory for the rest of your life. That's what the families of the Navy personnel are dealing with today. They need your prayers, they need your comfort, and that's why this morning I asked for your assistance in helping us deal with this case. We're going to get there. Give us a little bit of time and we'll provide all of the answers that we can for you. You can be proud of your community. You can be proud of your Navy. Thank God for the United States of America.
That's right.
Thank you.
All life matters.
Mayor.
Thank you.
Governor, thank you so much for being here and as a part of that. And I just want to say out to all of our Escambia County residents, City of Pensacola, how grateful we are that you're here. We've certainly gotten calls from our congressmen, our senators, and even the White House. And certainly they have expressed anything that they can do for our community, they are willing to do. And so we very much appreciate that. This is a tragic day for City of Pensacola. Again, I think the world of our base commander here, Captain Kinsella, who always says that as goes the base, so goes the town, and as goes the town, so goes the base. There's a deep affinity and relationship between Pensacola NAS and the City of Pensacola, and certainly the men and women that work here and serve our country every day. This is a sad day, but I think some of the things that were said there that you've heard, this is also a community of great resiliency, and I'm confident that both NAS and the City of Pensacola will bounce back from this day and be stronger as we go through. But again, I'm certainly here in support of everyone, and certainly want to thank all of our first responders, especially those Escambia County Sheriff's deputies that got here and took care of neutralizing the threat, and certainly all of our Pensacola police officers that were here assisting. We had EMS from Escambia County, as well as fire and rescue from both Escambia County and the City of Pensacola. We certainly, all of our first responders, and what they do every day to keep us protected. You never know when you're going to have a day like December 6th. So again, thank you to all those individuals who serve us every day and take care of us. That's which the professionalism you can expect from the city of Pensacola and Escambia County. And we certainly appreciate all of all those who've come, the governor, everyone else. The state of Florida has reached Pensacola NAS and the people there, and we will bounce back from this. Thank you.
I think we have time, myself or some of the others, if there's any questions.
Governor, as a former member of the Navy JAG Corps, former officer who served in the Middle East, how would you expect this investigation to play out?
Well, I think that I think the FBI is probably going to brief you guys in due time, and I think they're leading for it. But obviously, you know, when you have a foreign national involved, you know, particularly in that part of the world, the investigation is obviously going to be different than if it were just somebody from a local community. And I think you'll see that as things go on.
Governor or Captain Kinsella, can you maybe help people understand the background nature of what this training program is? Why someone from Saudi Arabia was training here?
Yeah, I'll let the captain, if he wants to weigh in on that.
We have a international training syllabus. We have students from several different countries that come here. They learn aviation. They become naval aviators while they're here. It's something that we've been doing for quite a while, and it's with our partner nations. It's important. That cross-pollination, that cross-training that we do with our allies is something that we've done for a long time. I mean, in World War II, we had Royal Air Force folks that were training here. There's always been international students training here because it's a good place to train, and it's a good quality training.
How many students do you have, international students?
I can't speak to the exact number of international students.
Roughly?
A couple of hundred.
What was he training to do, sir?
Second?
What was he training to do?
He was just in the aviation pipeline, so we'll just say he was training in aviation.
And at the time of the shooting, the suspect was a member of the Saudi Arabian Air Force.
I don't want to get into that. That's up to the FBI to complete their investigation to see exactly. It would be speculation on my part to say.
How far was he in the pipeline?
Again, I'm not going to speak to where he was in the pipeline or his exact training right now. I'll leave that.
Was he authorized to have a gun on base?
Weapons are not authorized on base. You can't bring a weapon on base unless you're.
Can you talk a bit about security measures? I think that is one of the biggest questions. What types of measures are in place to keep something like this from happening?
That's something that's difficult for me to speak here because our security measures, well, we keep them to ourselves for a reason. If I talk to you about our security measures, but I will say that we practice to this. This is part of our training. Our Master at Arms and our civilian DOD, along with Escambia County and Sheriff's Department and with Pensacola Police Department, we train to active shooter scenarios regularly. We just did one recently. We never expect it, but we train for it, and we remain ever vigilant for it.
Do you expect there's going to be more changes to this?
I'm not going to speculate.
Sure. How are you confident that he was acting alone?
I'm not going to speculate on the particulars of the investigation or exactly what happened. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody.
Can you talk about the heroism of your deputies, how, you know, their training prepared them and the quality of their character. They rushed in when a lot of people would not do so and risked their lives for that. I thought you'd like a chance to talk about them.
I appreciate that. We've been to the hospital, of course, to see the officers and their families. And to kind of reinforce what Captain Kinsella just said, we do active shooter training. It's both on-site training and also computer simulations that we train with the DOD police and the Master at Arms program in the Navy. And so this was an actual example of where all that training comes into being. You know, how do we react to this and how do we coordinate and communicate with each other? And so, you know, unfortunately, that training was put to the test today. I'll tell you, it's hard to speak to that without tearing up. I could not be prouder of the men and women of the Escambia County Sheriff's Office. They ran to the fight, not from the fight. And even though they knew there was an active shooter, and again, the chances of putting your life in danger are great, guess where they went? They went inside. So let me tell you, the best of our community was on scene today, and that's why it turned out the way it did.
Sheriff, as time has gone on, you've learned more about what happened. Can you walk us through what happened today, please?
Well, just very briefly, you know, we have a precinct not too far off the base. You know, thank God the call came in. We had officers that were available. It was about a 3 to 5 minute response. The call came in at 10 minutes to 7 this morning. I won't get into a lot of specifics on that because of the FBI investigation. And let me explain why we don't do that, folks. there's a whole lot of witnesses out there that are listening to these programs,
mm-hmm.
that are on social media texting each other. The worst thing in law enforcement that can happen to you is for me to get a second, third, and fourth-hand story from an eyewitness, from someone who was there who has a clear understanding of what occurred this morning, but now they're reading all the texts that they've sent people and people have sent back to them and what they see on the television tonight. And so that memory, which is very distinct right now, becomes clouded. And now we've begun to tell a blended story. It wasn't really what I observed. It's what you observed and I observed, and now we shared it with 10 other people. So we want to be very careful with that. That's why I really think, as Captain Kinsella has told you, unfortunately, many times, we don't want to get into that, because if you were a witness, I would want to know where you were at in the building, what time you were there, when did you hear the first shot, you know, what did you do, was your actions there, did you ever get eyes on the shooter, etc., did you help evacuate the building. Those are things that are critical for developing timelines, even to the point of angles of trajectory where students are running from.
I appreciate that. I was just wondering if there's been some facts that have already been established.
The facts have been established that we have, unfortunately, now 4 dead, 8 injured.
What type of weapon?
It was a handgun.
Are you able to address whether or not the shooter's room was raided?
I will not.
Was his name Muhammad Al-Sharami?
I will not confirm that. And, folks, I know the answers to your questions. Mm-hmm. I am not answering or confirming it, not because I'm attempting to be trite. It's because I am not the cognizant authority for this investigation. What that means is the FBI, the ATF, the NCIS on base are the lead agencies on this. We are a support element. And so while I have the answer to your questions, I am not at liberty to answer them.
Are you able to clarify the numbers,
please? I'm a little confused. I think this morning
we now have an additional person.
Additional person wounded.
Yes. Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Do you have an update on
Hey, folks, I'm Jason Borst, the Public Affairs Officer for the installation. We're going to stop the press conference right now. We have more information will come out later. We'll be sure to share that with everybody. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Guys.
That is the presser from NAS Pensacola. Heard a lot of new information out. Some things can't be confirmed by the officials. I imagine we'll probably have another presser this afternoon. We'll talk about that. Coming up also, we continue our conversation about where we are today. Your CBD store, West Mobile, and the 12 Days of Christmas charity event coming up. And plus, John Sharp joins us later in the show. Y'all stay close.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Live from your CBD store, West Mobile, and owner, my buddy Joe Brown, hanging out with me here and talking about a couple things. First of all, you came walking out and handed me a coffee mug full of chocolate. You've gotten my attention. It's got Sheriff Sam Cochran on one side, Penelope House anniversary on the other side, and I have a feeling our friend Tony Ann had to be involved in this.
That's right, Sean. We briefly touched on our first segment about the fact that I like to give back to the community. Coming up, starting December 9th for 12 days, we're doing the 12 Days of Christmas charity event. Each day, I will donate 10% of my sales to a different charity every day with a minimum of $100 guaranteed. And Penelope House happens to be kick off the event on Monday, December 9th. The other charities involved go from Mobile Theater Guild to the Jake Peavy Foundation to Mobile Baykeepers, a bunch of worthy organizations. The entire list can be found on my Facebook page. And we hope we can get the community behind this event and help raise some money for 12 different organizations.
All right, so if somebody was already planning to come in and make a purchase at your CBD store, West Mobile, they can go to your Facebook page and find the charity that suits them best and make that their day.
That's correct.
Facebook page, just search Your CBD Store West Mobile.
Your CBD Store West Mobile, and it's all over the page, the event. It's called the 12 Day. You can actually, there's an event in Facebook, 12 Days of Christmas charity event. You can search by that or Your CBD Store West Mobile.
Talk to me about this Christmas open house special you're having right now.
Well, today you can come in and buy one and get one 20 off, BOGO 20. You can also register to win a $250 gift bundle and a pair of tickets to Mobile Theater Guild's So Long Slice by Thomas Perez, which I'm blessed to have a part in.
You are shanking this.
I am shank.
If somebody comes in, can will you do a line for them? Will you do a line of shank? Will you...
I sure will. It's
at
no charge.
Very good.
Actually,
okay.
If you come in and said Shank sent you,
yes.
I'll give you an extra 10% off.
Okay. That sounds okay. So Shank sent you. Okay, that's what you need. And explain to people, too. You do a better job in the kind of language I understand. We can give them the address here, but tell them how to find you.
It's 1218 Hillcrest Road, right near the Gree Lot intersection, but right across from Waffle House. I'm looking forward to the 2 o'clock patty melt with you.
That's right. So this is that tells you where we are. You'll see the FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Command Unit. Talk to us, too, about you have events where you can have home parties and host these.
That's right. We talked about educating people when they come in the store before they buy a product, and a lot of people are directionally challenged, or they don't like to get out of their little pod of Spring Hill, which I happen to live in, or Midtown, or Downtown, or Loda, or MIMO, and all the kind of stuff. But so we'll pack up everything, and we'll come to you. We'll bring you a bunch of information, a bunch of product. All you do is you host a party, and you get free CBD. How does that sound, Sean?
That sounds great. And it comes in so many folks, too, that aren't familiar, they got to come in the store and see it because it comes in a lot of different forms.
Yes, that's right. There's the tinctures, the oils that you put under your tongue goes in your body sublingually. There's water solubles. There's edibles. There's topicals. And like we talked before, there's even products for your pets.
This is not... My pets need it. I just don't know how. Is it edibles for the pets, or what do we do with them?
It is. Bacon treats, beef treats, turkey, jerky, all kind of different stuff.
Bacon treat with CBD?
Yes.
And can that be for people, too? I'm, interested, because I like bacon, so I mean, I might be a candidate for that.
I've seen you eat. I think you need anything.
Okay, that's good. So as long as it has bacon on it. So once again, come on out. You can get this open house special. You say BOGO 20.
BOGO 20. Buy one, get one 20% off.
Okay.
And tell them Shank sent you and get another 10% off.
This is a perfect time to stop by and see you today. We'll check back in with you in a little bit. Remember, folks, go to the Facebook page for your CBD store, West Mobile. Pick your charity and find the day you're coming as well.
12 Days of Christmas charity event.
Great stuff. Joe Brown, thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, coming right back, more of our discussion with Joe Brown. We'll do that. And right now, y'all say hello to John Sharp from AL.com because I like to talk to him, but I'm going to give him a second here to brag about where he stands in the college football standings for the FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em. So go ahead, John. Go ahead and take your victory lap.
Surging, my friend. Surging. I love it.
You're surging.
10-week during rivalry week, and I'm very proud of that. I've recovered from a horrendous start, and I believe I have now officially left you in the dust, my friend. So.
You have.
I'm doing quite well, but it's such a fierce competition. I think I'm ranked like 40th. I mean, it's still
it is.
You can have good weeks. It's very tough.
Oh, you have to be like 99%, 98.9%, or 98.9% to be winning in our college pick'em. But, yes, you have come up in the pack. Speaking of competition, you hear that segue there, John? Let's talk about your story over at AL.com. Bradley Byrne, Jeff Sessions trying to get me to drop out of the Senate race. This is the he said moment.
Yeah, competition is starting to heat up there, too. This is based on a radio interview that Congressman Byrne had on the Matt and Annie show up north, and statements that he made during that show, in which he came out and he kind of discussed a little bit more about his conversation that he had with Jeff Sessions right before Sessions announced in early November that he's planning on running for the Senate, and the gloves were off apparently. I mean, Bradley Byrne's viewpoint was that he was told that. Mr. Sessions called Congressman Byrne up and said that suggested he should run for his congressional seat, and Byrne's remark on that radio show was that hey, Mr. Sessions, you don't own that Senate seat, and all the comments are on there on the story on AL.com, but basically he also indicated too that he kind of sarcastically referred to a statement that Mr. Sessions made to Congressman Byrne in regards to gas left in the tank, and yesterday I got a rebuttal statement from former Senator Sessions' campaign in regards to taking offense supposedly to that comment. So a back and forth indeed between Congressman Byrne and the former Attorney General.
You know, it's the two, and the thing is, it's the two from South Alabama here that are battling it out in this Senate mix. I wonder about this, and it was former Senator Sessions was on with me a couple weeks ago, and I asked him about that, and he said he had had this conversation. He mentioned it about conversation with Congressman Byrne, and said that he had told him that he wasn't sure whether he was going to run for the office or not. And I mean, then it goes into he said, because I mean, none of us were there for that conversation.
Well, then yesterday I talked to Secretary of State John Merrill, who on Sunday suspended his campaign, but he had indicated that his conversation with Congressman Byrne was that apparently Sessions had called Byrne a few weeks prior, so we're going back in October, where apparently at that time Sessions was a little bit more up in the air about wanting to run. So I don't know exactly when Jeff Sessions decided, hey, I'm going to run for the Senate or not, but it sounded like it maybe came all the way up until the very end, because John Merrill indicated that he got a phone call for Mr. Sessions on November 6th, the night before Sessions went on Fox News and announced that, you know, in fact, he was running for the Senate. And I went into a little bit more detail about what Mr. Merrill indicated, you know, that their phone conversation was about on November 6th. It was kind of interesting that Secretary Merrill indicated that he got a call when he was in Fairhope, and he was dining with Baldwin County school officials, and it came up no caller ID on the cell phone. He said, usually I don't take those phone calls, but I decided to take this one, and lo and behold, it happened to be Jeff Sessions.
You know, with this fairly not as crowded Senate race, but I mean, everybody's working towards a runoff here, and that's the question too. What does John Merrill getting out have to do with how does that throw any kind of wave through the idea of a runoff? I don't think it affects it much, but then if you get Sessions and Byrne, are they trying to split the same voters down here? Is it a different group of people? I mean, obviously, it's a lot better for Congressman Byrne if Jeff Sessions is not in this mix, and probably to some degree, it's a lot better for, you know, Jeff Sessions if Bradley Byrne's not in this mix.
It'll be interesting to see what the polling will start saying. I'm hoping that we start seeing some polling shortly. You know, certainly that'll help us instead of just pontificating and give us some real numbers to go with. But I mean, right now, you know, Bradley Byrne, since early part of November, has been, you know, focused clearly on former Senator Sessions. You know, his statements, the appearance at the LSU Alabama game. I mean, a lot of this stuff has been. Yeah, you know, I talked to him at the Veterans Day event in last month here in Mobile, and you know, it was he wasn't backing down from making comments directed towards Jeff Sessions. And so that seems to be his focus right now, and you know, we'll just see where the numbers start playing out a little bit. Hopefully we do in fact see some polling shortly.
Well, you know, they had that poll that came out, I guess, a couple of weeks ago. Club for Growth put the poll out that showed Jeff Sessions so far ahead, but also Club for Growth has been, I think, on the record saying they are anti-Bradley Byrne.
Right, so you have to keep that in mind, too, when you look at those polls.
I don't know. I would. Of course, we'd all love some more polling in this, but I can't imagine, just looking at this, this is anything but good news for former Auburn head coach Tommy Tuberville. He's got to look this squabble between the two and say, all right, you boys keep it up.
Yeah, his campaign's taken the stance that he's the outsider and more like Donald Trump, unlike yes. these two who he's claiming are a couple of Washington insiders. So, you know, his message right now is I'm the political novice. I'm just like Trump back in 2016. I'm the guy on the outside looking in, and look at these two guys, you know, Washington insiders that are going at it.
You know, looking at some of this, who told somebody what when, I do look at the timeline. I think it was Congressman Byrne to be the first person to announce he was running for Senate on the Republican side, correct? I mean, it was back in February or something like that. It was very early.
Yeah, he made that announcement at Winslow's. I was there. Mm-hmm. It's been a while ago. I believe it was even before Mardi Gras last year. So, yeah, we're talking, it's been a while.
So, At that point, it's obvious that Bradley Byrne is in for Senate. Then he has to. I wonder if he has some conversations over the months after that. And this is one of the things, the unknown, right? Because I've heard from the comments from both men here, and you wonder if there was any kind of understanding, or there wasn't an understanding of who was going to run. Because, I mean, well, let's just say brass tacks here. I don't know that many. Many elected officials or people who want to be elected official in South Alabama would want to run on the Republican ticket against Jeff Sessions, right? I mean, they just probably wouldn't. So the sign that people lined up to run against him, like Congressman Byrne, tells me that they thought he was not going to run.
Yeah, I think we've all asked him that before in the past, the Congressman Byrne, that, and the indication that Congressman Byrne gave us is that he felt that Sessions was not running. And of course, this is many months ago. So obviously things change over a court period of time. And that's not all we know. I don't know exactly when Congressman Byrne had prior conversations with former Senator Sessions, but, you and I probably both, we've been following this stuff for a long time. I'm pretty sure Congressman Byrne would not jump into a Senate race in which he felt that Jeff Sessions was indeed planning to run.
Right. I mean, we both have to jump to, I mean, nobody's given this as a fact, but at the same time, I just common sense tells me that there's a tell to it to some degree. It's going to be interesting also when, the outside influences line up to pick their horse in this race, which I know they have, but when they get a little more obvious about it. I mean, for Senator Jones, I mean, the people have lined up. He's raised a lot of money out of state. That money will be spent for him to try to defend this seat for the Democrats. But, we talked about Jeff Sessions. We talked about Bradley Byrne. We talked about Club for Growth. What about, I mean, remember last time in the special Senate Leadership Fund coming in so big for Luther Strange and that being egg on their face by the time it was all over?
Exactly. And that makes you wonder if there are a lot of these groups are going to stay out of the primary and wait and see what it might look like going into the runoff. And that's kind of the indication I've gotten a little bit, that we might not see some of these heavy hitters get involved in the primary until, see how things shake out. We're pretty certain that we're going to see a runoff. And how that looks might determine who might jump in, including our president. A lot of people are just waiting to see whether or not he weighs in on this thing. And that's really kind of the ultimate. So far, I mean, this campaign's been a lot about who is, for lack of a better term, the Trumpiest of the candidates. I don't know if that's meant as a way to try and get the president's endorsement or not, but if you talk to a lot of folks right now, the viewpoint is that the president probably stays out of the primary. But again, we'll wait and see how things shake up in that month period between the primary and the runoff, whether or not some of these groups or the president jumps in.
There he is, John Sharp, AL.com. People want to find you on Twitter. Where do they go?
Yeah, at John Sharp 99.
All right, we'll talk more about this. I know many more times between now and March.
Right.
John, I appreciate it.
All right, Sean, thank you.
All right, coming right back, more of Midday Mobile. We are live at your CBD store, West Mobile. Talk more with Joe Brown. By the way, come out right now, BOGO, 20% off. So he'll tell you how he says it real easily. I just say buy one, get one, 20% off. Plus of free samples out here. Stop by and see us. Grab some FM Talk 106.5 goodies while you're here as well.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Y'all say hello to my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Hey, Angelo.
Hey, how's it going today?
It's good, and let's talk about, since last time you and I talked, before I left town, you'd made the announcement it was happening, but now, like, it's official and posted up on their website and all that. If somebody's looking for one of those open-L knives, you're like the distributor, man. You are the retail location extraordinaire.
We are, and I was actually pleasantly surprised. We're one of the few places in a huge region down here. Apparently, the Gulf Coast did not know about open-Ls until we came along and started selling them. Sent that picture out to the rep for open-L USA. He loved the new display and instantly put us out there on their website. So, yeah, you want to check out this cool open-L knives, you got to come down here to Mobile Bay Coins.
Yeah, there's a lot of us that didn't know about it. I mean, you introduced me. I was completely unfamiliar years ago. You said, John, I want you to check out this knife. And I had never been around them. And here I am now. You know, I tell people about them all the time. I got quite a collection at my house. They're a great knife. They're a great gift to use. They're a great, I mean, great gift for yourself, for somebody else, or something to keep or something to use.
Well, it's one of those knives that to me, it sort of epitomizes what we sell here at Mobile Bay Coins: unusual, unique items. So if you come by the shop and you want to buy a gift for somebody, whether it's an open-L knife, whether it's an engravable Christmas round or bar, whether it's one of these unusual pieces of jewelry or one of the pop culture silver rounds, it's one of those items that whoever you gift it to, they're going to be showing it off to their friends and family for years and years to come, just like you did with your first open-L.
Okay, remind folks, too, you mentioned the rounds, and this is something they need to think about. I've used this for gift items as well. But you can find silver rounds that apply to that person, you know, whatever they happen to have on them that applies to them, but then you can get them engraved.
Well, and that's sort of taking that extra step to let people know that, hey, I was thinking about you, I thought really hard about this, and I went, you love this. They had a silver round that had that on it, and I put your initials on the back. It's your unique item. It could be a lucky elephant round for somebody to carry to some particular sports game. It could be one of these military rounds with somebody's initials on it. Maybe somebody just graduated boot camp or just commissioned, something like that. You can give them something that they know you thought about them, you planned ahead, and they will keep that and remember that forever.
All right, good stuff. Hey, here's what we need you to give folks directions to come see you.
Yeah, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. You can always check us out online at mobilebaycoins.com or go on to Facebook and check out the pictures there and like and follow us.
All right. Thanks, Angelo.
See you next week here.
All right, I will. Yeah, see you out there next week. Right now, today, we are at your CBD store, West Mobile, and I'll be hanging out here until 2 with Joe Brown and the crew from your CBD store, West Mobile. Listen to this. So going on right now, they have their open house special. You buy one product, get the next one 20% off. Plus, they have the free samples, the free gifts with purchase out here, and the raffle with the SunMed 1,000 milligram relief bundle. That is going to be, well, you stop by, you register, and it's $250 value. They're going to be giving that away. Plus, if you come in and ask for Shank, that is Joe's character in the Mobile Theater Guild's So Long Slice. If you come in and ask for him, maybe he'll do a line from the play for you. At the same time, hook you up with tickets to go to that. So stop on by and see us. We are on Hillcrest, just north of Greelot on the west side of the road, or across from the Waffle House here at Greelot and Hillcrest. So come on in, say hello, grab some FM Talk 106.5 goodies, and some goodies from your CBD store, West Mobile. I want to say this. Fred, I agree. So I'm looking at the text line right now. Fred, this is what I was saying earlier, and this is a little bit of the big worry here. That we have, listen, there are probably plenty of people from different countries learning to fly here in the United States, and they come from our allied nations. And you know my feelings over time about being allies of the Saudis. I understand it pragmatically, but idealistically, it has always bothered me, at least since I've been able to pay attention to those things. So what we heard from the press conference earlier from this mass shooting at NAS Pensacola is that the shooter was a Saudi national who was in aviation school. Now, Fred, my reaction, like you, do you remember, that's what I said last hour, remember what happened on 9/11? Now, those pilots, I would never say their names again, those dirtbags that flew those planes into the Twin Towers and the Pentagon and that field there in Shanksville, those people were here in the United States learning to fly. Remember all the stories that they were at this school, that school. They really weren't even that interested in learning how to land. Remember that? They were Saudi nationals, majority. There's a problem there. And I know I heard on the news update that the Saudi prince called and expressed his condolences to the... I figured that was coming. But how many... Do we continue? I'm sure it's money and it's good cash flow for places like NAS Pensacola, but do we let these people in learning to fly, right? They're in... You can say, well, it's innocuous. They're going to be a pilot for the Saudis or whatever. That's not a... Yes, but it lets them into, at some level, I don't think they have classified information, but it lets them in what I feel is too close to our men and women that are
that are our troops, you know, that in this case that are sailors, naval aviators. We're going to find out more. They're asking whether this could be an act of terrorism. It might not. It may be somebody's disgruntled about X, Y, or Z, but don't tell me it's domestic when there's that much shooting goes on. There was something going on there bigger than just they were upset with, you know, somebody in their class or something like that. So this is, and this terror, whether they define it as that or not, has come right home here to the Gulf Coast. So, yeah, I know. Fred, I react the same way with that story. Like I said, there are probably plenty of great folks that are Saudis that want to fly planes. That doesn't mean everybody who's a Saudi wants to fly planes. But in this case, what do you do? We have an ally like Saudi Arabia, and they're sending people. How do you vet? How do you qualify the people that get to come into a base like NAS Pensacola? Our hearts and our prayers and our thoughts with those families that lost everything today, with those loved ones. And remember, not just military personnel, but 7,500 civilians work at NAS Pensacola. We'll get you updates in the news throughout the afternoon on that and throughout the evening. Once more, we are live at your CBD store, West Mobile. Going to be here until 2 o'clock, so come see us. Make sure you get registered for that $250 value tincture and 1,000 milligrams relief cream, plus two tickets to Mobile Theater Guild So Long Slice. And right now, open house special, buy one, get one, 20% off that BOGO 20. And remember, next week, check their Facebook page for your CBD store, West Mobile, because it's 12 days of Christmas. Great charities are getting money back when you come out and shop with Joe and the crew here. All right, big thank you to Joe for having us out here, and we'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, and Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5, and my buddy Ed Rowan from Taylor Martino back in studio. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Sean. Good to see you again, buddy.
And it's good to see you as well, and I know you're like crazy busy representing so many of the veterans out there in the 3M earplug case. I got to believe that many, if not all of our veterans, are aware of this by now, but I would imagine 100% of the veterans that served would want to know if they have a case. That's probably what's going through people's minds.
We're very busy representing veterans, and we're signing a lot of veterans up. But I do think that there are a lot of veterans out there that are holding back and just hesitant to join this case. And I want to communicate to them that they should at least give us a call and get some information about whether they qualify and whether they should join this action, because I can give them that information.
As a Marine, as a veteran, help me understand, what would hold them back? Why would a vet not have called?
Well, I think we've talked about this before, but certainly the mindset of our troops and the reason why, you know, we are so strong militarily in this country is because we don't produce a bunch of whiners in our military.
Right.
You know, we have guys that tough it out, and ladies, and that's what the training is. I mean, the core of the training is to endure difficult things through all circumstances, and the military does that really well, and that continues on for the rest of their life. And so even to this day, when I go to a doctor, I sometimes feel a little guilty about saying, okay, yeah, my back hurts or whatever, because of the training that I had 30 years ago. So that's one of the reasons. And the other reason is just some of the misconceptions out there about this case.
Now, you and I were talking, and help explain this to me, because I don't have the insight you do, that vets can get disability for hearing loss and tinnitus, even with a 0% rating, or they don't have a rate. What does rating mean? How does that work for a civilian like me? What are you talking about?
So this is one of the things I wanted to talk about. Thanks for asking it. So a veteran can have a permanent injury and then get rated through the VA for that permanent injury. And that can be for a number of things. Hearing loss and tinnitus are two of those things. And those are the same injuries that we're dealing with in this case. I have a lot of veterans that come to me that don't have a hearing rating or a tinnitus rating, meaning that the VA says, well, you may have an injury, but we're going to assign you a zero rating. And then I go and I look at their records, their audiograms, and they definitely have a hearing loss and they definitely have tinnitus. So what I'm finding is the VA's rating system is flawed. So we don't go by what the VA says and their labels. We take an independent look at the audiograms, all the medical records, when determining if you have a claim.
Okay, you explained this before, but this is key to it, because there is a benchmark here. I understand this. There's a benchmark for people's hearing when they go into the military, and you have that audiogram to compare it to.
So another cool thing about this case, yes, is the science that goes into determining the case and analyzing the case and the evidence that we have. So when you go into the military, you get poked, prodded, and touched everywhere, and hearing tests, eye tests, all that. So yeah, we know what your hearing's like going into the military, and then we can track the earplugs that you received. We can track the types of exposure that you were exposed to. And the interesting thing too is that the military studies all of the sounds that come from machinery and weapons and all that. And I've got charts and charts that show how loud everything is. So interestingly, for instance, the most common type of weapon, it would be the 5.56 weapon. When I was around, it was the M16A2. Nowadays it'd be more the M4, but it's your 5.56 weapon. Mm-hmm. That has 156 decibels, okay?
You got a chart with this on it. You know the decibels.
I know the decibels.
The report from the rifle.
A Humvee is very unlike the Hummer you get down the road at the dealership.
Okay.
Humvee in the military is 88 decibels. To gauge that, that's about as loud as a smoke alarm going off about 5 feet from your ear. So that thing...
Yes, the engine and the machine. Wow!
I don't think McConnell or whoever sells those suckers would sell many Humvees from the military if they were this loud. But that can damage your hearing. So you've got constant noise, and then you've got the intermittent noises. Like shooting. So for intermittent noises like shooting, the human ear, average human ear, can sustain 140 decibels for 28 seconds. So you need that earplug to bring that decibel down below 140.
Because you said it's 156.
156. Now, these earplugs, the maximum they're going to bring them down, the decibel level that is 11 decibels. So if you're wearing these earplugs and you're shooting an M16, if you're an average person, according to scientific studies, you will suffer permanent hearing loss, okay? And everyone in the military has to go through rifle qualification and basic training and once a year. So just that alone, if you're in a Humvee and you're wearing these earplugs, you're going to be right at the threshold of having a hearing loss, because the constant noise, you can sustain 80 decibels for 8 hours a day. So you need to bring that down. If you're going to have 8 hours a day of a sound, you need to bring that down below 80. So if you're in a Black Hawk helicopter, mm-hmm. that's 108 decibels, I believe. So you need to bring that down to 80. So you need around 20-something or 30 decibels of reduction. 11.
You just told me that these earplugs, 11 decibels. That's it.
Literally.
They missed the mark on all three here.
Yeah. I mean, our troops would have been better off literally getting, wax from a candle and sticking it in their ear than wearing these earplugs. I mean, these things should have been thrown in the trash, and 3M should have just gone by their merry way and say, hey, I'll take my $10 billion I'm making on everything else, but I'm not going to risk the troops. That didn't happen. They pushed these earplugs to the government, to the military, like they were the best thing since sliced bread, the latest and greatest, and they were the latest and the worst.
Misses the mark on all these examples. Okay, if you mentioned disability, if a veteran is already on disability, does this lawsuit have any effect on those disability claims?
Great question. Another big issue with veterans is, okay, I'm receiving disability payments right now for my hearing loss or tinnitus, and that's a sure thing. It's not going away. I don't want to risk that by getting into some lawsuit for an injury that happened when I was in the military. This has been researched and studied, and it is a fact that if you have service-related disability payments, because of the sound that hurts your ears, suffering hearing loss or tinnitus, this lawsuit, any settlement in this lawsuit will not affect any payments that you're going to get from your disability.
That's probably a question a lot of people have.
Yeah, I added that to my contract. I put a line in there saying, I want you, to be assured that, we will not enter a settlement that would affect your service-related disability payments, because I just want to make sure that the veterans that I'm representing are comforted and know that that is a fact, and they can trust, the actual contract. But it is a fact. This is not going to affect your service-related disability payments if you entered this lawsuit.
All right. When one of the veterans picks up the phone to contact you, you're a Marine. They can speak to you as a Marine. That means a lot. I mean, y'all speak a language that civilians don't speak.
Well, it's just a fact, because when you've been through that, any branch of the military, it changes your mindset. And so there is sort of a hidden communication, almost like a secret handshake that people in the military have with other people in the military. Part of it may be a bluntness. You know, if you're in the military and been in there, you are usually blunt speaking, and you like people to speak blunt to you as well. And I'm blunt. I am. I'm a blunt lawyer. I mean, I love my clients, but I tell them things straight up. Sometimes I try to soften it, but certainly with the military guys, I can kind of get into my mold, and they like that blunt mentality that
speak
I have.
Speak veteran to veteran with them.
Talk your talk, I walk your walk. That's right.
All right. So let's say this. Somebody who has heard us talk in the past but hadn't contacted you. Once again, tell them, I mean, you've laid out these things that might have been some kind of headwind for them. There's no reason for them not at least to call and find out, right? I mean, if they have questions, you're going to answer that.
Right. People in the military are probably, that are holding back, or saying, you know, for whatever reason, it could be one of the reasons I discussed or any other reason why they think this is going to be a waste of time, this and that, whatever. But what's wrong with calling up a veteran like myself, someone that served in the Marines, and talking to me and just getting literally free advice? So you can just call me up and get free advice. And if you don't like how it sounds after that, then at least you've been informed. And everybody should be informed about this, because if you've served your country and you have a permanent hearing loss or tinnitus, you deserve to be in this lawsuit. And it protects veterans and people that serve in the military going down the road, because we got to make sure that companies don't intentionally market dangerous safety devices, knowing it's more likely than not going to hurt those troops. They need to be punished, and that's what we're here to do. So I need veterans to join in this case.
All right, get them the message now, so lest somebody tries this in the future with our fighting men and women. As always, I appreciate the info, Ed, and thanks for being part of the show.
Thanks, Sean, as always.
You can reach Ed Rowan at Taylor Martino Law Firm online, taylormartino.com. That's taylormartino.com. No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.